Jones and Mike, real radio for real people who are real enough to realize they really still have a few things to figure out. Jones is a hockey playing, city living, vegan bachelor who practices transcendental meditation when he's not biking to shows and Cub games. Mike's a beer swilling married father of four from suburbia. His motorcycling, marathoning, and martial arts are pretty much on the shelf while he limos children all over town to their activities for the next decade.
Sound familiar?
It's, you know, shit dudes say
about family,
women,
philosophy,
politics,
history,
people,
money,
pop culture,
kids,
fighting,
business,
life. Join the conversation. 312-957-7210. Hashtag Jones and Mike. 24/7 worldwide at jonesandmike.com.
This hour, do you give personalities to inanimate objects? Believe tall people are smart and need to like the people on the sports teams you root for?
This is Jones and Mike. Jones and Mike.
Jones, I never felt more like a couple than I did with you tonight. I'm imagining the people who saw you pull over in the snob and pick me up out in front of my work. They were like, oh, look at those two gay gentlemen. They're probably headed out for a bite to eat after work.
They may have thought that. It does bother me that you still insist on calling the Black Panther a snob.
Well, you named it the Black Panther.
Yes, I've been calling it the Black Panther, and I even slip it in on purpose a couple times just to try
really?
To reinforce that in your brain, and you keep going back to the snob. I would say, hey, do you want me to pick? I can pick up in the Black Panther. Oh, I'm going out to... Let me throw my bag back out in the Black Panther. Like,
God, I have not heard that, man. I must be three sheets to the wind every time you see me.
It could be. But regardless, snob, Black Panther, what have you.
Well, no.
We did look like two old high school buddies or a gay couple today.
No, especially in that trendy neighborhood where I work. Yeah, there's just a lot of couples. And a lot of gay men, honestly. It's coming out of my building, especially.
Okay.
It just is. And then you come up, and you've got your salmon checkered shirt driving the Black Panther.
That probably didn't help.
No. And
I had cargo shorts. Gay men will not wear cargo shorts.
Yeah, they'd have to see you in the Black Panther, though. You're deep in the cockpit.
That's true.
And now that you've actually regaled me with the history of Saab... I can actually call it a cockpit.
Right. It has a fighter plane history.
That's not a gay term. It's really like that company made fighter jets?
It is. Yes, they did make fighter jets, but it is like they designed it to be like a cockpit. So when I drive home tonight, I can hit a light that will black out all the lights in the car except for the speedometer. So it feels like a cockpit.
Really?
Yeah, they do all that kooky, weird stuff, man. Saabs are quirky cars.
And,
I love them, though.
Swedish,
yes.
And are the Swedes known for their aeronautical prowess?
Well, Saab is one of the top fighter plane manufacturers in the world. That's all. Outside of that, I don't know.
Whoa. Boeing, Lockheed Martin, they take a second... They play second fiddle.
They are among the top producers of weaponized military fighter planes.
Oh, it has to be like U.S., Britain. Don't they they make jets that like can
Saab
take
is in
off
the
like
mix.
Helicopters
right,
over there.
But Saab is in the mix.
Russia, China. Maybe the Chinese are like lower on the list that we want to give them credit for. But the Swedes are up high?
I'm not talking about their military. I'm talking about this company.
Okay.
And so like Lockheed Martin will get a government contract. Saab could get a government contract from... anywhere.
Right. When Angola wants to have three planes.
Right.
To finally have an air force.
Will be there.
That's right. The Swedes will come to your rescue and make affordable planes. Although they stopped making their planes after 8 years. Snob was around for a long time. I take that back.
No, Saab stopped making automobiles. You said they stopped making planes. They still make planes.
Right.
They stopped the cars.
Right. But was the car company, that was around for a while.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Long time. Since like World War II, I would say.
Exactly.
Years ago.
They didn't know how to make dough doing it. Or they just were like, you know what? We were making so much between the meatballs and the the fighter jets. Why should we bother with the cars anymore?
No, well, then it stopped.
And death metal.
It went through a couple incarnations in terms of ownership.
Did anyone help you name the car the Black Panther? Panther.
I came up with that name.
God, why? Like, why? Really, I think you got to give a car, it's like a ship. You have to name it, like, after a woman.
No, I didn't feel that way about the car. I like when the car has more of a, it's given more of a personality than, say, an actual personage, person, you know, type of identification. I like it just to have kind of a personality to it. So that's why I went with Black Panther. And I've kind of found through this journey of purchasing the Saab and growing close to it that I've really noticed a pattern of where I really start to love and attach myself to things, but not in the way that people think material or possession, where I want to have a Lamborghini or a Ferrari or a 72-inch screen TV.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, well, not in the way not in the way that I'm a hoarder either. But what I've noticed
Live a Spartan lifestyle.
But what I've noticed is, so last night when I was going to leave my apartment, I caught myself, I grabbed my bag, put it over my shoulders, I was walking down the steps, and as I walked out, I have that David Bowie picture book from his David Bowie Is exhibit that was at the Museum of Contemporary Art. Mm-hmm. As I'm walking out, I look at the end of my bookcase where I have it kind of, it's not just a book in a bookcase. I have it flat on the tabletop, so it's kind of displayed.
Yeah.
And as I walked out, I caught myself, I stopped, and I gave it the thumbs up. Now, I live by myself. No one's around me.
Yeah.
And I was like, why did I just give the book a thumbs up? And then I just walked out.
Wait a second, though. Is that's about your obsession with Bowie? Like, you know, David Bowie, give me strength?
Well, no, because then I started really noticing a pattern for myself. And it really started to stand out over the last few days. But I've noticed, like, the items that I keep that I'm always walking around with in my book bag, or my backpack book bag, like I'm a kid.
Yeah.
But I'm walking around with in my backpack. I attach, like, I attach some level of living creature to the things that are in that backpack. So, for example,
yeah, give me the full table of contents here. What's in that book bag?
What I do, I have a pair of scissors that I keep in there.
Yeah. You're supposed to put that in your pencil case inside your book bag.
Well, I set up the scissors particularly in a particular small pouch.
Yeah.
And I set it up in a way where it won't rattle around, because otherwise I'll worry that it's stabbing the bag. Now, I won't really worry about it, but I think to myself, like, oh, no, if I flip it the other way. No, no, no. Even if I go to put it in the wrong way, I'm like, oh, I'm stabbing the bag.
Well, right. You don't want to wreck your book bag.
No, I'm thinking about hurting the bag.
Oh.
Like, but not hurting it, but I just think the bag, I have this little instant, I can't even describe it. It's like a 16th of a second where I go, this will hurt, the bag won't want this. It will hurt the bag. And then there's another pouch where I keep, like, some information just written down, like if a phone or computer crashes, I keep it in the book bag, and there's this, or backpack, and there's this little mesh pocket that I keep that information in. And the other day, I went to put the slip of paper in there.
Mm-hmm.
And I just quickly mashed the slip of paper in the little mesh pocket, And it just went in there, curled over funny. And I was like, oh, no, it's all scrunched. So then I straightened it out and then put, like, another kind of index card thing that I had in there to keep it flat so it wouldn't get curled up.
Yeah.
Because it would be, like, I would think, like, no, it just doesn't want to be stuck in there all curled up until I need it again.
Right.
I want to give it some space.
Well, that seems reasonable. You don't want it to be... So why is that?
Because the sheet of paper would want it to be.
Okay. All right.
That's
yes.
what I'm thinking.
Your therapist. What has your therapist said about this?
I don't have one.
That's unbelievable.
Now, the other thing that I've noticed I do too, when, like, if I have an old pair of socks or an old pair of underwear and I'm a typical guy, I'll wear that stuff until it's almost dust. And then finally, when it's time to throw it out, and I feel like there's enough of a personal attachment to it, I've worn the stuff.
Uh-huh.
Before I throw it out, before I make the motion to throw it out, I say something to it, like, you serve me well, buddy. And then what? I'll throw it out. Yes, I do that. I do that all the time. I've now realized I will address inanimate objects and just kind of let them know, like, I'm thinking about you. I want you to be comfortable.
I won't forget you.
Even though we're separating, it's almost like putting down a dog where it's like, we had good times. And I just kind of look at like that old pair of socks, and I'm just like, hey, man, you were there for me at that basketball game and I needed you.
That's
you were
right.
Great. You did your job.
That's right.
And
you
then
were
I'll
the wind beneath my legs. Yeah.
So that's
weird. But I don't think that's that weird.
On
the one hand, it's weird. On the other hand, I don't think you're alone.
Oh, I don't think I'm alone either. I think I'm alone in admitting to it.
Yeah, that's probably a problem. You probably shouldn't admit to as much as you do.
That is my problem.
How are we going to marry you off and have the Jones and Mike blowout wedding of the century?
Just have to find someone as strange as me.
Who never listens to the show. Yeah.
Really?
Yes. You're putting your foot down? They have to have breasts?
They have to have breasts.
All right, more on this next. It's Jones and Mike.
Another Pacific Rim Omega customer speaks.
My name is Tony G. I was very impressed by taking the product and the purity of the pharmaceutical grade of the omega-3 fish oil. I really felt very, very good by taking the product. As far as my mood, I noticed the collagen in my face and some of the lines that have disappeared, my nails, my hair. I highly recommend this product, Pacific Rim. I really, really enjoy the product, and I look forward to purchasing more products in the future.
Find out what Tony and thousands of other people know. Pacific Rim Omegas are the best thing you can do for your health. And get 59% off your order right now when you take advantage of this special exclusive offer. Go to radio.mydailyomega.com right now and save 59% off your order of Pacific Rim Omegas, or call 877-324-4227. That's radio.mydailyomega.com. radio.mydailyomega.com.
Jones and Mike Worldwide at jonesandmike.com. 312-957-7210. Hashtag Jones and Mike.
I love how you leave your house and you have a like a portrait, like a painting of like your Aunt Edna or something.
What? That's not Aunt Edna.
Whoever.
It's Bobby Sands.
Oh, that's a dude?
That's a dude.
That's a dude?
That's Bobby Sands.
Is like an Irish hero,
no,
right?
Yeah.
Like
he
a
was
labor hero or something?
Right. He was a guy. He was in an English prison. He wanted to be treated as a war hero. He went on a hunger strike.
Yeah.
And he died in 1981. He's this huge iconic hero among people from Northern Ireland. So my dad and all these other Northern Irish guys revere him.
Yeah.
And one night he went out with his buddies and they went to some benefit, like Northern Irish Aid benefit. And he wound up buying or winning this painting. And it is absolutely dreadful. It's terrible looking, but it's a portrait of Bobby Sands, and that has become our family's leg lamp.
Yeah, like the from A Christmas Story.
Yes. So that's why I put it out there. But people have seen that picture and been like, oh, is that your mom?
Yeah, I thought that was like your aunt, and I thought that every time I make fun of it, you're like, dude, that's my aunt.
No, that's Bobby Sands.
Am I living in an alternate reality? I have made fun of that thing, and you kind of been like, dude, that's not cool. Is it because it's Bobby Sands? I shouldn't make fun of Bobby Sands?
No. Well, if you've said that, see, I thought you knew it was Bobby Sands. I'm trying to recall those times when you said that. Maybe I was just kind of joking, like I knew you knew it was Bobby Sands.
I thought it was a very, like, ugly, deformed woman.
No, it's Bobby Sands.
I thought it was a woman with,
see,
like, special
needs. See, I thought you knew
needs.
It was Bobby Sands, because when you went to Ireland, I told you if the topic of Bobby Sands comes up,
don't talk about
don't
it.
Don't joke about it, because that can turn it. It can.
Oh, I did. I saw
into a fight.
Yeah, I saw a guy we know turn on your buddy because he said something about Margaret Thatcher once.
Right.
It was like, geez.
So I
almost
remember,
like busted up the party.
Right. You're right. But so
you
that's
Irish
why,
people are crazy.
I thought you knew Bobby Sands was. And you're like, oh, is that your aunt? And I was like, oh, I might be have just gone into like, oh, Mike. Thinking, oh, he knows it's Bobby Sands, but he's just, hey, is that your aunt?
No, I really am that dumb. And like he probably was viewed as like a terrorist by
the British.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. be that as it may, it's in the exact position as like the Notre Dame, like go play like a champion today sign.
Yeah, and I'll reach up and touch under it.
Yeah, you could be slapping, you know, Bobby Sands 5 when you leave, but instead you turn and give like Isaac from Love Boat double guns and the wink to David Bowie.
I do, yes.
And be honest,
my little David Bowie book.
Yes. Totally. He's all looking like Ziggy Stardust, blank, vacant eyed, all drugged out on this coffee table book that you have. And in your mind's eye, or some level of your subconsciousness even, I imagine you are imagining him winking back at you like,
no,
you're gonna crush it today, mate.
No, I don't. No, another thing that I thought of that I do with inanimate objects, though, that is very strange, I've also noticed, see, I don't expect that they're thinking of me or that they're going to react to me, but I feel like I should think of them or let them know that I'm aware of their existence or appreciate them in some way.
Yeah.
So, for example, if I'm making cereal and I have opened like a bag of raisins and I just put I'm almost at the bottom of the bag, so I shake all the raisins in there and like two or three get stuck in the bottom. I don't need them. I don't need to eat them. What are they, like a quarter of a calorie?
Mm-hmm.
But I think to myself, no, that if I throw them out, they won't fulfill their purpose, and that would create anxiety for them.
God, are you weird, man.
So I'll dig in there. Even if I'm in a rush in the morning, I'll dig into the bag and like try to scrape out those last raisins so they get into the cereal, because that's what they were supposed to do.
Die like a hero.
And yes.
It's your like Lieutenant Dan. He was supposed to die on the battlefield.
Yes, and that's what I'm thinking about when I think about those raisins.
You don't want to go out in a landfill. You want to go out in my sewer system.
Yes. But that's its purpose. That's their purpose. They came that far, and to not fulfill their purpose might upset them.
And they may be in the bottom of the bag thinking like, oh my God, we're such abject failures as raisins.
Or why couldn't that guy have just emptied out the bag? He got rid of everything in the bag but us.
What was it about us that he didn't want?
Yes.
You really are a bizarre human being, but you're not alone. You are not alone. There's a whole history of humans loving inanimate objects. So much so that that's the title of an article by a guy named Paul Hebert, if you must know. Apparently, this author writes in this article, this is a very common trait for people.
Okay, that's good.
And maybe not common like 90% of people, but more common than someone like me might think. Like, initially, when you started talking, I was thinking about like, oh, well, you know, I used to name cars, and of course we name boats and things like that. So naming inanimate objects, not a big deal. Giving them female names like B.B. King's guitar Lucille came to mind right away. And I'd imagine like B.B. King probably had some nights where, you know, the diabetes, it was really afflicting him that night, and maybe he was just like, you know, Lucille, you're all I got. And he probably wanted to make sweet, sweet love to Lucille a few times. Did you ever see the psychopath who, like, makes love to his car, by the way?
Yes.
And I don't even know if it's, like, a goof or if it's, like, a real psychiatric, you know, event that I'm watching when I see these videos about this guy who like lays under his car and like smooches it.
Yes, I've seen that, and I've seen him do it. It has to be. That looks like a put on. See, what I'm doing is real quick. Like, even if you observed me, you probably
I'm not as
really
weird as this, as that guy. I'm in my league all unto myself.
You probably wouldn't even know, except when I give the David Bowie book a thumbs up before I leave in the morning.
Yeah.
Or I verbally say goodbye to my socks.
Yeah.
Other than that, you probably wouldn't know all of the little weird things I do to show my inanimate objects respect.
And those are fine. It's this idea of like, I have to do something with this inanimate object or else it'll feel badly. That's when it goes like over a line for me. Like, for example, I drink coffee every morning and I have the same routine. I make the coffee the night before. It's piping hot, ready to go at 6 a.m. for me. I use the same mugs for 15 years now. I have the same, like, these four mugs. They're all the same. So every day I've got the same, like, it's a mug with chili peppers on it. Everyone in the neighborhood knows I'm the weird chili pepper coffee mug dude walking around, walking his kids to school or whatever with these mugs in my hand. But I never look up there and go, like, I haven't given these mugs a little love recently. I should probably try this mug today. Like, it's just part of my routine. But you, I think, might actually feel some bit of sympathy.
You know what?
For other mugs.
I don't... Here's the thing. I don't feel like I have to rotate around and make sure I'm using all my inanimate objects equally. I just want to make sure that I'm not cruel to them. If that makes sense.
This article by Paul Hebert starts off around mid-February. Someone on Reddit, and many people don't use Reddit, but Reddit is kind of like the repository of weird out there. It's a repository of tons of information, but it's like a community site. You can up or downvote content, and little community boards of content are stored there, or archived there, and they even like had a mutiny where like the CEO of Reddit had to step down because the community's all like mutinied. So Reddit's a weird place. But around mid-February, this article starts off, someone on Reddit posted a meme that declared the following, quote, "Sometimes when I grab a cup from my cabinet, I will grab one that's in the back and never gets used because I think the cup feels depressed that it isn't fulfilling its life of holding liquids." The sentiment proved popular. Quote, "I used to work at a toy store, and if anyone ever bought a stuffed animal, I would leave its head sticking out of the bag so it could breathe."
I kind of know that. Once there's some kind of weird thing that goes off in your brain that once you attach a human or living quality to an inanimate object, you have to react to it. Once I think it's real, I have to react to it.
Yeah, I can't even really relate to this. Recently, we sold some items here. Like, my wife's a big fan of like putting stuff out, and like here in Naper, Vegas, everyone throws away like perfectly good stuff all the time. Like, to be a junker in this town, crazy.
Glorious.
And even we, like, every now and then, my wife's like, "Get rid of that old table in the backyard and go down the street and pick up their table that they're throwing away. It's way better than ours." So we upgrade sometimes based on people's garbage. But recently I decided, you know, I'm going to get rid of some bikes and some kids stuff that, you know, the babies have outgrown. No more babies allegedly are coming around here during this marriage. So I'm starting to get rid of that stuff. And I got to be honest, the first couple of people that came with new families and they were buying some of this stuff, I found it hard to complete the transaction. Like, I didn't want to take their crummy $20 for this bike because I was like, oh, my kids have all ridden that. Like, I started to really get upset.
Yeah, but here's,
and I was like, I'd go in the house and I'd give my wife the money and I'm like, take it.
I know.
I need a drink. What else is new?
Yeah, you're right. No, here's the difference, though, from you to me. You're attaching your children to that object. No. I'm just thinking of that object as a living creature unto itself.
Right, right. Yeah,
Yours actually makes sense because you're like, I'll never teach another child to ride on a bike again. And that was the bike I taught all four kids to ride on.
Yeah.
I understand that.
Right. And I think in some ways I'm also going like, this is a chapter of my life that's closing. I don't know that I made the best of it, and I'm never going to be able to repeat it. So,
made a lot of
Jesus.
Mistakes.
I know. Yes. Worst dad ever.
Yes.
In this article, anthropologist Stuart Guthrie has a book called Faces in the Clouds, A New Theory of Religion. So this article then goes like, you know what? We've been doing this since we were like, you know, since the beginning of time, of human time at least, when the human, you know, hominins or whatever we used to be. By the way, they just found like another species that used to intermingle with us humans, by the way.
Really?
Yeah. So that was just, you know, announced in some study. It's all BS. In his book, basically draws the line that, you know, we have basically religion grew out of the, you know, the totemistic, you know, ritualistic adoration of inanimate objects. And so in that way, this article goes on to say, you're not only not crazy, it's actually the basis for all of our, you know, religion and maybe even Western civilization started and grew out of ascribing human personality traits to inanimate objects. So go and, you know, fly your freak flag and call your car the Black Panther and give thumbs up to David Bowie if you want.
my David Bowie book. Yes, I will. I feel a little bit better. It kind of makes a little bit more sense when you frame it in a religious sense. I mean, I grew up in a religious house. So maybe that's where it kind of started. And then you also, you know, being raised Catholic, you have, you know, you repeat your prayers a certain number of times and you genuflect and make the sign of the cross. And there are these habitual things that you do again and again and again. Like I would have these little habitual routines I would do if my parents went away for the night and I was babysitting and I would have to do this routine or else they wouldn't, I was afraid they wouldn't come back.
Oh, geez. So maybe, that's like OCD, dude.
Yeah, but I'm not OCD, but I had, I had real strange routines where I would have to, there was an order where I would have to watch them once they got into the car to back down the driveway. I would have to run into the front room, window and wave at them. And I would wave at them until they wove back at me, but I wouldn't stop until one of them waved back. And then once they did, then they would drive, pull out into the street, drive down, and then now they can't see me anymore, but I would continue to wave until they went around the corner and then I could no longer see the taillights. Then I would make a sign of the cross three times.
Oh, Jesus.
And then I would jump onto the carpet in the front room and I would take three steps across the carpet on the front room and then jump over the wood floor onto the tile into the hall. And that was the routine. I did that routine.
Dude, you are so certifiable. That's weird.
I did that routine for years. For years and years and years. And then I knew it was weird. I knew it was really weird. And then there was just one day where I said, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do the routine. This is absurd.
Was it hard for you to go cold turkey?
I was laying in bed like in a cold sweat.
And if your parents would have like died on that excursion, you would have felt responsible.
Yes, I was totally just lying in a cold sweat up in my bed.
Oh my God.
And, I mean, just the complete, my body just relaxed and just went into this state of joy when I heard the garage door go open up at like midnight. They were home. And that my routine, I didn't need, that was proof. I didn't need to do the routine.
And you never did it again.
And I never did it again.
And you don't do anything like that
Not
now.
Really, no. Not that I'm aware of.
Although you used to like walk down the street and like if you, like frequently you would like make the sign of the cross with your thumb on your hand while it was in your pocket so nobody could see it. Yes? Cop to that publicly?
I'm trying
to. Like, you would
think,
like constantly be doing little signs of the cross so nobody could see.
When I would sometimes start, before I would start a hockey game, I would kind of do that inside my hockey glove like three times or something.
Yeah.
It's just like a little habitual thing. But I didn't go around constantly making the sign of the cross.
So that is kind of like a, you know, and I can see whenever I'm with like a hardcore Christian who's like, you know, you Catholics are like cultists. You guys are like part of a cult. You guys are drinking blood. You're doing all this stuff that's not in the Bible. Like, you guys are bad guys. And I, of course, I want to fight back a little bit, but I'm always like, yeah, you know, there is a little bit of idolatry in Catholicism that I've never really been all that, even though I do a lot of it, the wearing the cross and the scapular and, you know, have, you know, we don't do it, but lots of families have the Mary statues. And at some point you wonder, are people kind of crossing over to really praying to that statue as opposed to whatever the statue is supposed to represent, when people flock because that, they think that they're seeing, you know, some apparition or some visage of Mary, but it's really just a salt stain, you know,
right
in the cement under the underpass.
That could very well be it.
You wonder when they stop, you know, praying for the intercession of the mother of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, and when they're really just praying to some stained cement. And really, yeah. And really, what's the difference and what's the harm if they are?
I would agree with that.
So therefore,
your final point.
Yeah. So therefore, bro, you are bizarre, but you're in good company, bro, because we're all kind of crazy bizarre.
I'm bizarre, but I'm not unusual. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, you know, yeah, you're a total creep, but there's like billions of other creeps, right. So we're fine.
Well, if anyone out there has the same kind of weird quirkiness as me, maybe this will bring them some relief to know that there are others like them and
yeah,
like
you're not
me
alone.
That are out there.
Yeah, you're not alone. and give us your story, info@jonesandmike.com. We'll keep your anonymity, but we'll probably end up mocking you.
That's a given.
Why do people love tall people so much, Jones?
I don't know, but
another curiosity next, Jones and Mike.
When it comes to finding a holistic doctor near you, where can you turn for help? When you need a cancer doctor who will advocate for a non-surgical, non-chemical course of treatment, where can you find her? When you need a chiropractor or acupuncturist? When you need help with ailments that many doctors and even hospitals just plain turn away, like Lyme disease? Who can help you with natural solutions and strategies for diabetes? When you need help to find an integrative, functional, complementary, alternative approach, option, and practitioner, the Health Freedom Network is there. Since 2009, the Health Freedom Network has been a leading resource for natural medicine and health information and research. Now we're also your best resource to give you access to the top docs in a number of specialties, from cancer to stroke, and in modalities from chiropractic to dentistry. The Health Freedom Network's directory at healthfreedomnetwork.com. Better information for better choices. Find your new health practitioner at www.healthfreedomnetwork.com.
Jones and Mike Worldwide at jonesandmike.com. 312-957-7210. Hashtag Jones and Mike.
Jones, when you picked me up for our date tonight, according to the people who saw you pull over on the side of the road and watch me get into your snob.
Black Panther.
This is the Black Panther. Did you notice the gargantuan size of the people leaving my office plex?
No. Do you work with... Is it notable how tall your coworkers are?
Yeah, they're enormous. They are enormous. I'm, you know, 5'11", 6', depending on who, you know... is measuring me, so not super tall, but above average. And this is the one instance I can say I'm above average compared to most men.
Right.
Isn't like the average height of a human man like 5'7", but that's like all men.
Yeah,
the Filipinos,
yeah,
and the Latinos, they gotta be just weighing that, skewing that average down, right?
I would think.
And then of the people that make it, like snobs, totally like Swedes, Norwegians, Russians,
yeah,
and stuff. Yeah, like humongous.
The Nordics, yeah, they probably sky high it a bit.
Right on. So, you know, but by and large, I'm above average. But when I'm walking around that building, dude, like the women are like 5'10 and up.
Really? Even the women are tall.
So tall, dude. So tall. And then they'll throw on heels on top of it and they'll be like towering over you.
See, that's it. I don't mind. Look, if a woman's already taller than me and she throws on heels, that doesn't bother me. What bothers me is when people affix a certain level of authority to someone purely based on their height.
Well, right. That's what I'm fearing. I'm fearing that this company that I work for, dude, like they prize intelligence. Don't ask why I'm there. I probably won't be there that much longer.
Yeah, probably
not. But no. But... So they're known for having an intelligent workforce. That's their like claim to fame. And I believe that they have bought into this notion that tall people are smart people.
I bet you they have, but I bet it's got to be subconscious. No one would admit to that just in terms of sitting down and logically looking at a situation and addressing it, thinking it through.
Well, you also hire people like you. So at some point, somebody was like, we got to hire tall people. So they just started doing that. And then those hiring managers started hiring people like them. So that's how you get a workforce that's all kind of the same sometimes.
Well, see, and I think that's kind of interesting that you have an entire workforce that's tall, because the whole rap is it's supposed to be business owners and managers and leaders that are tall. And it really... It drives me nuts, and I sometimes look, there's so much complaints about, there's so many
complaints
out there.
You're not jealous or anything, right? Let's just get that off the table.
Here's the thing, though. I really don't really care to be tall. It doesn't make any difference to me. Now, the funny thing is, though, when people try to put me in a box based on my height, maybe because it's easier to do, you don't need a big box, but...
Yeah, baby.
That irritates me. That does irritate me. So... this weekend when I went to a jiu-jitsu seminar with Jake Shields, who was a former UFC, fought for the welterweight title.
Awesome.
I got a picture with him. And as I was going to take the picture, I mean, I admit, regardless of height, I never put off a super alpha masculine air. It's really rare that there'll be a picture that's out there with me where it's like, Jones just looks like he takes care of business. There's like one or two, and people have noticed, notably reacted to those pictures where they've said, you look great in that picture. Or women would see a particular picture where I just looked a certain way, and they're like, ooh, that's a good picture of you. But it's always like the same one or two. The rest of them, I know I don't photograph well, and I just come off looking like a little wisp. But I had the picture with Jake Shields. I was all excited to take the picture because I thought, well, this is cool. We were in this jiu-jitsu academy. There was no air. It was really hot. Everyone's like sweaty. I thought this will look like a rugged, tough guy picture.
Yeah, yeah.
And I go and take the picture with Jake Shields. And as soon as I saw it right away, I was like, I look like a little boy. There was no, whatever I wanted the picture to be, it wasn't going to be that.
Yeah.
I showed it to you and said, you know, I just realized I will never be the Steve McQueen. I'll never be just that naturally a cool guy. I'll never put off that naturally alpha masculine air. And you said, I don't know if that's it. I think it's just people will look at this picture and they'll see Jake Shields and they'll look at the taller guy and go, oh, he's the man. And I was like, so really, it's that simple?
Yeah.
And it
in some cases, I also then pointed out we know some people that aren't super statuesque, but they do kind of have like a more rugged, I'll kick your ass, sea bass look about them. And you just don't have that.
And I don't have that. However, when I said, you know I don't have this, you even stepped back from that and said, well, no, I don't even know that it's that.
Yeah.
It's Jake Shields is taller.
Yeah.
And we weren't even talking like we were. Right now, you'd naturally noticed, well, Jake Shields is taller. So people will look at him as being more masculine.
Okay, so let's play it out this way. What if Manny Pacquiao was standing next to Jake Shields? Same difference, right? Okay. Like, Pac-Man could kill Jake Shields.
I don't know about that, but regardless.
Really? You think outliers. Pac-Man and Shields would be a good fight?
A
fight.
Oh, I would go with Jake Shields.
Yeah, he would just shoot on him, take him down, and just break his neck.
Yeah, you always go a grappler. Yeah, I would always.
I just
got to
think
that.
Like Pacquiao would be pretty fast and would just keep pummeling on his forehead.
He'd eventually Jake Shields would just get a hold of him. But anyway,
okay, all right.
Even if you put there are
but
outliers.
Still, Pacquiao tougher than you, yes.
Yes, and there are outliers.
And he's shorter
than
you.
What I'm saying as a general rule, there is that perception that, oh, look at that guy. He's tall. He's a leader. I've dealt with that in the workplace, socially, just even when I hear some of the girls talking at work. Oh, I met this great guy last night. And they'll mention all of these great attributes that some guy had that they met at a bar. But like the second thing is almost always, he's tall.
Oh.
And so they'll say, oh my God, he's super cute and he's tall and he went to the University of Chicago and he's a doctor and he drives a Ferrari and he owns all those other things come after he's tall.
And do you think on some level they're like, if you're tall, you've got a huge dong?
No, I don't. No, I think it's so basic.
So, okay, so then what would that be?
People just think tall
why do
is
they
desirable.
Need, why? Okay, so this has been hardwired over millennia. How did it come to be that women were hardwired to seek out someone taller than them? Then?
I think it's for the same reason that women instinctively think, well, I shouldn't say instinctively, but more often than not, find tattoos sexy. Find like a leather jacket or a motorcycle sexy. It gives off the air of bad boy, alpha male, I can protect you, that sort of thing. Which even to that end, I think is crazy because there was a time in human history where it was important to have people around you that could take care of business because you had to stake your claim. You ate what you killed. You had to protect your homestead. But we don't really live in that time anymore. We don't.
We don't?
No, we don't. And I know you're going to we could go off on some like tangent about where we're going as mankind or as a nation.
Yeah,
but
I mean, like
by and large,
a priest was beheaded today.
Yes, but by and large.
In the middle of mass.
Okay, let's just.
I guess he tried to put up a fight too, man. Pretty awesome. The guy was like 86.
Good for him.
He was French and he was 86 and he was a priest, but still had some fight in him.
Well, good for him.
That's like a triple threat.
I have not seen that story, so I can't really comment, but...
Well, we are living in a dangerous time when I think it's still a good idea to be able to defend yourself, which is why
I know,
people
but
would be surprised to know
no.
that the shorter guy here could kill the taller guy.
I know, but what you're taking it to that level of, well, when ISIS walks into the room, I'm talking about in Naperville.
They're called Daesh, okay? Get it right.
They don't call it that.
No, they call them ISIL. How come our president still calls them ISIL?
Okay, would you just stop? You go off on these ISIS tangents.
Okay.
In this neighborhood, in Naper, Vegas, every wife is going to go to bed tonight, and they do not need to have some alpha male killer, I will protect the homestead guy in their house so they wake up the next morning or a week from now. Uh-huh. That's my point. We don't live in that world anymore, but there's still kind of this humanoid Dumbyville where we attribute positive attributes to height, to having a tattoo or wearing a leather jacket, those are the people that should be leaders. They're smarter, or they can defend, or they can, you know, fight for you, or
okay,
be
so,
a justice warrior.
Yeah. When in human history did it become not important for those things? Like within the last 150 years, right? Industrial Revolution onward,
but
would you say?
Here's my point. Why would a tattoo tell you that? Why would a tattoo sleeve tell you that?
I think what you're saying is there are some people that have a predilection for that. But the height thing I will buy into. The tattoo thing, leather jacket thing.
Why would a taller person be a better business owner?
Well, okay, let's just take tallness. I think you're muddying the waters by throwing in tattoos and stuff.
I'm just saying how people react to traits and then they attach something else to it.
I think it's
that
the same reason.
I don't necessarily think is there.
I think the tattoo thing goes right along the same lines of why some people are attracted to people from other races, for example, because it's forbidden fruit. I know that my parents would not dig this. If I were dating a black guy, for example, or dating a guy with tattoos or whatever. So that sort of dangerous thing, bucking the conventional norm, all of that stuff, that's one thing. And I think it's a certain segment of people, but I don't think it's as pervasive as the tallness, because the tallness has been studied. Most CEOs are 6 foot and over. Politicians. I'm holding in my book right now Blink by Malcolm Gladwell. I cite it all the time because it's a cool book, but there's a whole chapter about the Warren Harding error. It's called Chapter 3 in Blink, Why We Fall for Tall, Dark, and Handsome Men. Malcolm Gladwell goes on to talk about how Warren Harding was kind of plucked from just being like an also-ran politician, kind of plucked and put onto foisted onto the American people and onto the stage by some like lawyer and lobbyist who met him named Harry Doherty, who had said, quote, I'm sorry, journalist Mark Sullivan wrote of the moment when Doherty met him, and this is from the book, Harding was worth looking at. He was at the time about 35 years old. His head, features, shoulders, and torso had a size that attracted attention. Their proportions to each other made an effect, which in any male at any place would justify more than the term handsome. In later years, when he came to be known beyond his local world, the word Roman was occasionally used in descriptions of him. As he stepped down from the stand, his legs bore out the striking and agreeable proportions of his body. His lightness on his feet, his erectness, his easy bearing added to his impression of physical grace and virility. His suppleness combined with his bigness of frame and his large, wide-set, rather glowing eyes, heavy black hair and markedly bronze complexion gave him some of the handsomeness of an Indian. It goes on to say all of these unbelievable things, mostly having to do with his physical attributes. Later on, Malcolm Gladwell writes, Warren Harding was not a particularly intelligent man.
Right.
He was, most historians agree, one of the worst presidents in American history. so much so that it's become called the Warren Harding error. So, but people do, like,
they
Mitt
do.
Romney is a, he's another tall, doofy dude who just kind of skated along, probably was captain of the football team, and then head of his frat, and then became a captain of industry and all of this stuff, ran for president twice, but, you know, you listen to the guy talk, and you're like, how? Why am I listening to you right now? You're an idiot, but you're
that's
tall.
That's my point.
So he kind of kept getting, you know, kind of falling forward and graduated, you know, to the head of the class just because he was tall. So that I will absolutely agree with you on, more than this kind of forbidden fruit theory that you're throwing out there.
Okay. Well, those are two separate things. But
I believe that stuff is hardwired into women, and it goes back when you needed strong, tall dudes who could do more work theoretically than maybe a smaller, slighter built guy could.
Okay.
And it's only been in recent, you know, human histories, like a little tiny sliver of our total existence, that smallitude was, you know, could be equal in many ways.
Smallitude is ratitude. Well, here's the thing, though. Why it's a flaw. It's a humanoid flaw, I believe, to get stuck in that line of thinking. At what point or how could we even go about rewiring ourselves? You can rewire your own brain to understand something or to create a new pattern where you look and you go, you know, no, it's not necessarily one-to-one. If someone has this attribute, they're this. Those two things are completely unrelated.
Well,
so
no,
how do we go about...
You're right. And Gladwell says that in Blink. He says,
yes,
you know, you can't control what he calls thin slicing. When you see a tall person and you immediately ascribe the notion that he's or she is competent or smart. However, Gladwell says you can, as you're saying, rewire yourself by exposing yourself to variances and retraining yourself to trust in those as well. But by and large, the book Blink says, hey, go with your gut. Your gut is right, but you can change it by altering your environment.
Yeah, and I think that's the key. We need to start taking
sleeping with more short men like you so we can see how great you are.
Yes.
Is that really the ultimate
message? This was a long walk. This is a really long walk to say, I think more people should start sleeping with me and people like me.
That's right. They have to give you a chance, man. You got a rad car. You're a snappy dresser. You know.
I can do push-ups.
You could do tons of push-ups, and you happen to talk and have full conversations with your David Bowie coffee table book.
Well, that's a whole, yeah. And
but
it's
besides
not
that
weirdness is not related to my height.
Have you also seen studies that show that men prefer women with ample bottoms?
Yes.
Have you ever seen that? Even though the conventional wisdom would be that in America and in the West, we prize skinniness.
Right. No, and I would fall into that category. I would say I prefer an ample bottom.
And why is that? Even though it used to be that, like, the Rubenesque body figure for women was what was prized. Why? Because if you were pale and you were plump, it meant that you were rich.
But, right, yes.
But then it became that you were rednecked and skinny. It was because you were out in the field doing a lot of work. But since the Industrial Revolution, now our ideas of beauty have kind of changed. And even within the last 100 years or 50 years, especially, like, the women of the 50s seem like they were more shapely. And now they're kind of more thin, you know, railish types, waifish types, in the media at least. But I think most dudes would be like, the better the deeper the cushion, the sweeter the pushin.
I would agree with that.
Right?
Yes, I do think most people would feel that. But I don't attribute anything to that appearance other than
I don't find
it attractive.
But,
someone has an ample bottom. I bet they are great dressers. I don't.
Well, no, but
anything other why, than I find it attractive.
Why would the human male want to go after a woman with large breasts or larger breasts and wider hips? Why do you think?
Why do I think?
Yes.
It's just what you're attracted to?
No, because they're breeders. Because a long time ago, like 100,000 years ago, they were the ones that could give you the most babies. So you wanted that body type, and they could help you do work.
Yeah, but that body type, you just pointed out yourself, though. You said that's kind of a new thing now. For the longest time, once we hit the Industrial Revolution, then everyone was prizing thinness.
Well, no, the media and all of that stuff has kind of...
prized thinness.
No, the media has kind of put out there since the 50s, but that the ideal body type is real thin. But I think most people, when they're being honest, would say, no, I want some curves. I do want curves. I don't want my women to look like, you know, Bjork, like a little child, like the media tells me we all should look.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I haven't really studied the history of physical attraction, so I don't really feel...
What the hell are you doing in that apartment the whole time? You could be totally unlocking this stuff, and then you could become...
I'm having conversations with my inanimate objects.
That's right. Stop talking to your...
I have a lot of conversations.
Stop talking to your coffee mugs and wondering if your wheatgrass feels poorly if it doesn't, you know, fulfill its destiny by going down your disgusting maw.
It's you an could affliction. Be, you need to be more respectful.
You could be unlocking like how this all works and then using it to become the greatest pickup artist who ever lived.
It's a pretty daunting task. I don't know that I'm the man for the job.
Speaking of being conflicted, I know you're conflicted about Aroldis Chapman and the
yes,
Cubs.
I am.
We'll talk about that next. Jones and Mike.
Another Pacific Rim Omega customer speaks.
My name is Tony G. I was very impressed by taking the product and the purity of the pharmaceutical grade of the Omega 3 fish oil. I really felt very, very good by taking the product. As far as my mood, I noticed the collagen in my face and some of the lines that have disappeared, my nails, my hair. I highly recommend this product, Pacific Rim. I really, really enjoy the product, and I look forward to purchasing more products in the future.
Find out what Tony and thousands of other people know. Pacific Rim Omegas are the best thing you can do for your health. And get 59% off your order right now when you take advantage of this special exclusive offer. Go to radio.mydailyomega.com right now and save 59% off your order of Pacific Rim Omegas, or call 877-324-4227. That's radio.mydailyomega.com. radio.mydailyomega.com.
Jones and Mike Worldwide at jonesandmike.com. 312-957-7210. Hashtag Jones and Mike.
Jones, I know it's important for both of us, but I suspect more so you, to really like the people that you're rooting for from a sporting sense.
Yes, I do value that. I do value that. I don't have to love them, but I don't need... I can't... It's a struggle when someone is... I just know they're a bad guy.
Right.
They're a problem.
Right. This comes to the fore this week. The Cubs traded a whole slew of prospects and one major leaguer to the Yankees for their closer, Aroldis Chapman, who has topped out on the speed gun at 105 miles an hour this year. So most people are pretty excited about that, except for the little pesky detail that he did serve a 30-game suspension at the onset of this season due to some off-the-field issues that involved... some lapses in judgment, I think, is how he and his lawyers would put it, Jones.
Yes, I think you're being very gentle about it. But yeah, he served a 30-game suspension for apparently getting into a physical altercation with his girlfriend. And the other thing that people aren't talking about, which I think makes this whole story very hard to swallow, firing off his... Police showed up to his home with and found his girlfriend... hiding, cowering in bushes by the house, and he was firing off 8 shots into his garage.
He shot his gun into the garage wall.
Yes, 8 times.
And so she obviously had feared for her life. And before that, like, he had choked her, right?
That's
choked
what they her. Say. And now he was saying, his story is, no, I just poked her with my 2 fingers. And he's tried to spin out of that and just leave it at that. And the stories were conflicting. The police said now between Chapman and the girlfriend that the stories were conflicting. And then they just dropped it. But The thing that I struggle with is...
Which, you know, you got you just because you can't be charged and convicted, the police aren't going to charge you unless they think they can get a conviction. So, but that doesn't mean that nothing happened, and clearly he was the aggressor and a bad guy. At least that night, but probably a pattern of badness.
You would guess. Now, the thing with me, I've been watching, and I know that Chapman has been on the trading block for a while, and I knew that the Cubs were looking at him, and privately I was... Even though I want them to be great, I want them to win the World Series, I was kind of like, oh, I would love if we didn't get him and we went down another path. I want – this team is so likable. They're almost like a young, like, little league team. They're almost like all friends. And there's such a good feeling from this season – from last season to this season. And then now you're introducing this guy into the picture.
Yeah.
It makes it harder for them to root for. Now, had he come out last year or at some point this season and addressed the situation honestly, it might be easier for me to accept. You know, I've seen over the years, I've seen Mike Tyson talk about his transgressions so openly and so honestly that I'm not going to sit there and say, oh, I love Mike Tyson. But I have a certain level of respect for his willingness to step back and assess himself honestly and to know right from wrong, good from bad, know that he has that devil that's always chirping at him. He shouldn't give in to it, but at times he does.
Well, having said that, didn't he? He's never really admitted that he raped the woman that he was convicted of raping and did time in Indianapolis.
No. He's always said, he's always said, I never raped that woman. Mm-hmm. But when I was doing time in jail, I was okay with it because I thought to myself, well, this is the time that I deserve for all the stuff I've ever gotten away with. And he's also talked about when he's having sex with a woman, he does enjoy if they feel pain. He did enjoy that.
Oh, my God, dude. Now, and he clearly is a psychopath.
Right. But
there's like a whole like genre of pornography out there where like people are choking women.
Sure.
So I don't think that's that rare, unfortunately.
No,
I think dudes are psychotic creeps.
And there are women out there that want to be
choked. Choke me, yeah.
That's fine. That's their choice, what have you. But what I'm saying with this Chapman thing and the Cubs bringing him on board, and then there's all this back and forth about, you know, Chapman releases a statement, the Cubs release a statement, and they're all just so pithy and pathetic. You know, you have, I think it was Crane Kenny who's coming out and saying, oh, no, it was Tom Ricketts.
Yeah, Ricketts did a whole statement.
We pulled our Lotus behind. We pulled our Lotus aside.
Araldis. Let's go with Araldis.
Good Lord. I keep getting that name wrong.
What, Araldis. They were towing a Lotus? Like, yeah. I love those cars.
Araldis. Yeah. We pulled Araldis Chapman aside, and we told him that we have a certain expectation of conduct here. Like, oh, give me a break.
Yeah.
What does that even mean?
Well, I'll say this. You got to get in front of that stuff as an owner.
But how
when
about...
When the McCaskies brought in that Ray McDonald guy who had been accused of of multiple crimes, actually, and then they had to cut him just like about a month later for more transgressions, and he'll never play again. But beside that, like, the McCaskies, I don't know that they really... I don't think they handled it that well. I thought that it took a little prompting by the media before they were like, oh, we better actually make a statement, I guess, about this.
And Ricketts was smart enough to know, okay, I'll get ahead of it and I'll say this. But... Okay, can we answer why he was firing off a gun 8 times and why you would bring that guy into your workplace? There is that part where when people start throwing around the term rape culture, where I go, yeah, I really am starting to see that again. I would go online and watch all these articles about Chapman going to the Cubs, about the trade, and there were writers in town that were... Steve Rosenblum was talking about it. Now, I didn't like Rosenblum's article because he brought Patrick Kane into it, and it's like, no.
Yeah.
As the facts have come out, we've just... I know a lot of journalists really puff their chest out, and I'm going after Patrick Kane. It is time to just accept that the man did nothing wrong. So let's just let that one go.
Yeah, poor judgment in being out at a bar in Buffalo, bringing someone home. Of course.
He's a professional athlete.
Yeah, he should want to get laid, there's no question. But given his track record, that's not what he should have been doing. But you're right.
Rosenblum, I wouldn't even say that.
Rosenblum's a hack, and his ilk are hacky. Of course, they have to fill column inches every day and bloviate on the radio, so they're going to always have a position on these things. Honestly, I don't know how they talk about sports all the time. There's just not that much to talk about every single day,
I know.
At least the national guys have their pick of the litter, but just talking about Chicago sports?
It's got to be maddening.
No thanks.
But other than when he references Patrick Kane, he did go after the Chapman deal. He did go after the Cubs. How do they stand behind this decision? And when I would read the responses of people, you know, below the article where they would post their little comments, everything was, get the World Series? That's all I care about. You know what? Things happen. Move on. Even if he did it, I'd rather see a World Series in this town. I don't need him to be a saint. And it just went on and on and on.
That's icky.
How easy it was to just look at a guy who just a couple months ago had the police come to his house because he was apparently choking or beating a woman and firing off a gun inside
his baby
his own
mama.
Home.
Yeah, yes. Not even just a woman.
Yes, the mother
a regular
of his
woman
child.
I can get, but not your baby
Mike,
mama.
You don't do
no,
don't,
I dig it, dude. Like, so here's
don't,
the thing.
Don't.
In terms of having to or wanting to like the team you're rooting for, the people on it, I can absolutely understand your position. Now that I'm having to describe all of the hard issues that the men and people have to grapple with in life to my children, where I have to describe, or I have to tell them, you should hear me tell them about religion and why we do certain things. Like, I sound like we're crazy people. Like, when you start to break it down to a child, you go like, oh my God, this is how it sounds? This sounds nuts. So, and then I start to talk about why we root for the Bears, for example. Well, because we're 40 miles away from the city called Chicago. Yeah, so, and I'm, oh, well, and that's just what you do. You root for the people nearest you for some reason. I don't know why that is, but we do. So, so loving that logo, that insignia, the players change, but you always stay true to that logo. It is kind of bizarre on one level. There have been a couple of times in my history of rooting for the Cubs, for example, when I didn't really dig them all that much. For example, when I think in 2008... was that when they were having the breakdown when they had like relievers calling up to the broadcast booth because the
no 2008 they were good. That was the first year of Fukudome.
Well, right. So they were decent in that stretch.
It was like 2006, I think.
It was
when you're talking about they were calling up and complaining about Steve Stone and
sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
That
yeah.
Was
yeah.
Earlier. That was before 2008.
I want to say like yeah, Dave Veers had called up there and like they had some players that were just really unlikable sorts. Aramis Ramirez was a dog. He wouldn't even run out fly balls. And Soriano, he had to be glad handled and kowtowed to. We don't know if we can move him from second base to the outfield. What will he do? And they were unlikable guys. I was like, well, I'm rooting for him, I guess, just because of that logo. But I kind of am rooting against him. I kind of don't want to see him in the postseason. I would hate for this team to be the one that wins the World Series. That would be kind of a bummer. This current team, yeah, they're likable. They're lovable in many ways, but not for being losers, because you want to root for these kids. So to bring somebody who's a bad seed potentially into that mix, it is problematic.
Yes.
Am I going to not root for them or not root for them in the ninth inning? I can't say that. But yeah, I can't imagine that outside of like children or like complete mopey human beings, I can't imagine people are like just throwing what he did away and going like, I don't care.
But they are, though. It seems the vast majority
the people
of
that
people
comment and the people who comments on Twitter or something.
Yeah, but no, like, with sports,
not real people.
Well, it's a little different.
Serious
in sports,
people.
I think they're more engaged. And that they want to have their voice. I think there are more people who will respond to sports articles where you'll get a broader segment of the population because people feel confident enough to comment about that. But I have a strong suspicion that if Chapman's on the mound and he goes 7-7 on his first 7 save opportunities, when he comes on for that 8th on a Sunday afternoon at Wrigley, he is going to walk on to that mound to thunderous applause.
Yeah.
And I am just trying to think, like you, I'm not going to suddenly start rooting against the Cubs. I want to see them win the World Series this year. But what do you do? Like, how do you make your voice heard or make it clear that I don't approve this guy? Not his talent, but as a man, I don't approve this guy right now.
Is it, I mean, is it even remotely possible that he had like a meltdown?
But you have to.
I don't want to be an apologist.
Maybe he did.
Is it possible that was the worst night of his life?
Maybe he did.
And maybe he did not choke her at all. And he just went out and he blew off some steam and some caps.
That's when you have to take a page. And I said this actually last year about Patrick Kane. I said, I can't believe this is how far Patrick Kane had fallen. This is what I was saying last year about him. He needs to be more like Mike Tyson. And this is a time with Chapman where he's got to come out and be more like Mike Tyson. Don't release a statement through your agent.
Mm.
Come out there and say exactly what happened. Exactly what happened. And beyond that, talk about emotionally what you're doing going forward. You can make something positive out of this. But you can't do it when you're just going to carry on like, well, I'm an expensive athlete. I make millions of dollars.
I'm tall.
I'm tall. My agent has told me this will blow over. Just release this statement and everything will be okay.
Easy. Honestly, it was easier for Mike Tyson to do that because he was an international star who could go on with Barbara Wawa, with Robin Givens, and talk.
Chapman could do that anywhere.
No, he can't get on with Barbara Wawa.
No, he can do that. He could do that anywhere.
Well,
I don't care about the
Chuck
national
Garfine on Comcast Sportsnet. It just wouldn't carry the same weight.
You don't think he couldn't get on with Dan Patrick if he wanted to? Of course he could, but it doesn't matter the weight.
Can he come on with Jones and Mike? Why don't you extend the invitation and see if he'll make his first man-to-man, heart-to-heart? Hey, bro, Aroldis, we may not know how to say your godforsaken name.
It's Aroldis.
We may called you a Lotus a couple of times.
I know the guy's name. Once I said it wrong, I wasn't going to say it right.
And we may talk to inanimate objects. We don't choke them, though, bro. Okay? But you can come on this show, bro, and you can lay it all on the line.
I would love to extend that, but
do
I know
it
would be a waste of time.
No. Let's do it this week. And so here's the thing, though. A sports guy, they're just not that bright in most situations, especially in baseball, wouldn't you agree? Hasn't there actually been like kind of people have taken a look at, well, the sports that have the brightest athletes, and baseball usually has the lowest IQ level?
Yes.
Because they like... None of them go to college. Not that you have to be bright to go to college. Here's two perfect examples of two guys who are living marginal existences, frankly, even though we have college degrees. But by and large, isn't it like the farm boys from Ontario go into the NHL?
Yeah.
And at a young age and never go to college. And same thing with the baseball dudes. So for the most part, those are the two sports with the lowest education rates or IQs. I don't know if
perhaps
that's overstating it.
I will say among most sports journalists, they say the best guys to interview or the most quality in their interviews in terms of being genuine are hockey guys.
Well, I think that's the Canadian-ness right
there.
That
could be, yes.
Where they're polite at least and they treat people with respect.
Yes.
But so Aroldis, Aloetis, whatever his name is, he probably couldn't handle himself. Not that Mike Tyson is so great, but he's at least got personality and an affability and a certain likability. Even if he's on TV talking about rape, you want to believe him. And so Aroldis, I think in English is his second language. It just would be the deck would be stacked against him.
I know, but I think what he's done requires that. Whether he's good at it or whether he would like to do it or not, to me, no longer matters. He just has to do it.
So you'll be kind of sitting on your hands when it's game 7, 9th inning, Cubs World Series, Cubs Rangers, and it's freezing cold. You'll be sitting on your hands, but not because your hands are cold.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I don't know how to respond to that. I really don't. Because I'd like to react in a certain way where people know, like, ooh, that guy does not like Chapman. I would love that there was something that I could do.
You'll turn your back on the last three outs of the Cubs World Series victory.
Okay, I will.
You clutching your David Bowie coffee table book, muttering to it.
Yeah.
We're not really here right now in Wrigley Field, David. David, we're not seeing this rapist. Or not this choker.
You and I, we've got to stand strong. You're my only friend. You're my only real friend.
You and Bobby Sands.
Yes. You, Bobby.
Come here, little popcorn at the bottom.
Yes.
I don't want you to not fulfill your destiny.
It's not that weird.
I gotta be honest, man. If I gotta sit next to you or Aldous Chapman, I gotta think long and hard about that.
Oh, give me a break.
Who is the bigger creep here? The guy who wonders if the raisins are gonna feel badly if you don't eat them, because they'll have lived a meaningless existence on this planetary plane. Or Aldous Chapman, who blows off a little steam with his 40 in the garage every now and then. Who doesn't? I do. Only mine's a 40-ouncer.
Right. Well, you know damn well you'd be squeezing me tight and keeping our Lotus. Araldus! At arm's length.
That's how you disrespect him.
Yes!
Like Saddam, like George Bush. You say his name wrong every time.
I've just got to get like kind of a bad our Lotus jersey. I've solved it.